Don't forget to visit marketingcasts.com to find even more custom curated marketing podcasts just like this one. That's marketingcasts.com.
Hi, this is Sean Halter, host of the CMO Suite podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and catch up on all the previous episodes at www.thecmosuite.com.
This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Uconnex. Uconnex provides digital solutions and teams to brand CMOs, VPs, and marketers looking for true transparency in the biddable media space. From paid social and PPC to complex platforms like the Trade Desk, brands from across the world have connected to Uconnex. Visit them today at uconnex.com. And No Kid Hungry. We're proud to promote No Kid Hungry and their many initiatives to help kids in need of meals. Visit them at nokidhungry.org.
This episode of the CMO Suite is also brought to you by Winmo. Winmo is the most comprehensive and widely used advertising database, providing an unfair advantage to media and marketing professionals nationwide. Winmo tracks every national advertiser, their agency relationships, and key executives within each organization. Get instant media spend, competitor tracking, and industry trend analysis in one easy-to-use application that integrates with all major CRM platforms. CMO Suite listeners receive complimentary trials of Winmo just by visiting winmo.com/CMO Suite.
Finally, the CMO Suite is presented by thecmocouncil.org as their official marketers podcast. The Chief Marketing Officer Council is the only global network of executives specifically dedicated to high-level knowledge exchange, thought leadership, and personal relationship building among senior corporate marketing leaders and brand decision makers. The CMO Council's 15,000-plus members control more than $550 billion in aggregated annual marketing expenditures and run complex distributed marketing and sales operations worldwide. For more information on membership, visit thecmocouncil.org. Let's start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You are listening to the CMO Suite. I'm your host, Sean Halter. As a reminder, the CMO Suite is presented by Connectivity Holdings, Uconnex, and Winmo. We have as our guest today, Catherine Voiles Mobley. Catherine is the Executive Chief Marketing Officer at First Advantage. Catherine, thank you for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So the joys of COVID and the craziness of technology and everything else, we're doing these last few episodes remotely, and thank you again for making some time for me. Thanks for jumping through some crazy hoops to try to make sure we get all the technology working, and of course for allowing us to shoot this on video. If you don't want to listen to this on Apple Podcasts, you can head over to Vimeo, or you can head over to YouTube, but we're on everything. And you're out of Atlanta, am I correct?
I am. Born and raised, actually. I'm a rare Atlanta breed. I'm an Atlanta native.
So it's funny, I feel like, you know, everybody talks about New York and Los Angeles as kind of these hubs for CMOs, San Francisco to some extent, but there's quite a few CMOs that are out of the Atlanta market. We've had several on the show in the past as well. So do you feel like it's been a hub for a little while? Is it kind of the secret hub? And with all of the chaos of people moving now, do you think that will increase opportunities for more and more CMOs to be based out of that market?
I do. I think we have a lot of great marketing talent in Atlanta. We always have. I think we've been a quiet market. A lot of us that have gotten to the point that we're at have basically been able to use the airport. I mean, let's be honest. It's very easy for us to get anywhere in the world. I'm global. Used to travel about 500,000 miles a year. Obviously have not done that this year, but I think that allowed us to take roles where I spent a majority of my time either in New York or London or Las Vegas or California. And so it allowed us to be more mobile. And I think, too, we really always have been a little bit of a sleeper town when it comes to technology startups that kind of started in the 90s because real estate was cheaper here than it was in the Valley. And now we're really getting built out more as a tech hub. We're obviously transactionality for finance. And I think there's a lot of great marketing talent that sits here in Atlanta. A lot of it I've worked with personally, and a lot of it has mentored me as well.
So born and raised, that's what you said, right?
Born and raised. Not a lot of us. Most of us are transients. But my Camp Creek Parkway, which is where the airport is at, my grandmother was a camp. So, and Riverdale is named for my great-grandfather Rivers, which is just south of the airport.
That's pretty crazy when you think about it.
Yeah, it's
pretty neat. I'm in Florida. I grew up in Ohio, and they call a lot of people halfbacks that live in Atlanta because they either come from Ohio or New York, and then they come all the way down to Florida, and they realize it's too damn hot, and they go halfway back. Seems to be Atlanta.
Exactly.
So that's cool that you've got family that's kind of born and raised there. What did your parents do growing up? Were they in marketing? Were they in a family business of some sort? I mean, obviously, half the town's named after you guys.
No. So So my mother was a stay-at-home mom, and my father worked in the automobile industry. So there's a family-owned business here called Ed Foyles Automotive Group, which my father was the general manager for him when he opened the Chrysler store back in the 70s. And he worked in the automobile industry for about 45 years. I like to say that I got my sense of business from my dad because I grew up either in the showroom, the body shop, or the service center. So running with the boys and learning how to negotiate was one of the fun things I did. And to this day, I really feel like I have a lot to attribute to that for my business tenacity. But I did not want to go into the business at all. It's 24/7. It's 7 days a week. My dad, you know, I had to basically skip school some days to go fishing with my dad to spend time with him. So it was just not a business I wanted to do for my family.
You know, and even with everything that's happened from a technology standpoint, it's pretty amazing how that really hasn't changed that much entirely for the automotive industry. It's still a 6 day a week, long hours kind of job for a lot of people.
It really is. It is. It's for a lot of people. And it's, you either love it or you don't. And I'm one of those people that I am really good at purchasing cars. I have liked to negotiate with them. I don't do the dog and pony show. My husband will tell you it's one of the most uncomfortable experiences you'll ever go through. But that's really how I handle business negotiations too. So, you know what? I take credit for it. But yeah, it's interesting to me. I still think that, you know, even with Carvana and Tesla and different things, the model is just so old. I don't know what it's going to take to break it. I really don't.
Yeah, Tesla's interesting. I mean, obviously, again, they've turned everything on their head. They're very unique, though. And even as others seem to try to chase them a little bit, I think those of us who have Teslas, you know, it's not just the fact that it's an electric vehicle, it's the technology that's built into it. I mean, he's way ahead of, which is crazy to say, way ahead of a lot of the big boys in what he's built out there and the fan base that he's built as part of that. And I say him, obviously, he's got a massive team underneath him that's built a lot of those parts and pieces out. So you talked about your dad for a little bit. It was just interesting to kind of hear you say, you know, that you had to almost kind of steal time from him a little bit because business is so crazy. I think one of the things that I've learned from this COVID situation that we've all gone through, I've got two kids, they're 16, and I've probably spent more time with them this year than I have probably the last 3 or 4 years. And you start thinking maybe millennials have something here. You know, they talk so much about not having to necessarily work for life, but it has given many of us a chance to be able to kind of just take a bit of a pause and spend some time with our family and our kids in ways that maybe we never could have or would have given ourselves permission to do so.
I agree. It's interesting. My favorite family time is our family dinner. We sit down as a family as often as possible. I have two boys, 16 and 13. Oldest is football player. Youngest is baseball. So, and it's fall and spring ball. So pretty much it's sports year round. But when we can sit down and have dinner as a family, it's nice. I didn't realize, I guess, how much when I was traveling, I missed that. And so being home has been great. Also, just being able to, you know, take them to and from school, not miss ball games. I've always put my kids first. So even when I was traveling, there were times that, you know, if my son was going to end up starting in a JV football game and I could rearrange my schedule, I'd fly home on a red eye and surprise him at the field. And so I've always kind of lived that life that I've always asked people to realize that I'm a mother first and an executive second, because my family is what's most important to me. And that's my legacy. So, but yeah, I agree with you. I think we've all had a chance to step back. I think the biggest challenge is I'm not really good at self-care at home. I'm really good at taking care of everybody else. I didn't realize that on the road, I was much better at just, you know, kind of decompressing, having time to myself. So we're starting to learn how to figure out, have boundaries for mom so that mom has time to herself as well. So there's two sides to it, but yeah, I've enjoyed it. And my kids are actually in school now. They've been in school since August 1st.
So. Ours are as well. Again, we've done this show for 4 seasons now. We're just getting ready to wrap up the 4th season. You're one of our last handful of guests. The amount of time that I've probably spent this season post-COVID on just wrapping in a conversation around self-care and self-love and reminding ourselves of our own value. I feel like I'm veering out of marketing sometimes and I'm veering into the self-help world a little bit, you know, the Howard Stern of marketing, I guess, but you have to do it because without it, what's the point of any of this? What's the point of continuing to grow and learn? If you're not taking care of yourself, we're not going to make it, you know? You have the best job in the world, pay you the best amount of money. But, you know, as we get older, certainly for me, as I get a little older, and you remember these analogies that people would use as you were growing up, like money isn't everything in this. And you think money is everything. And then you kind of get to it and you're like, oh, now I kind of see what they're saying a little bit. But you came up through, did you come up through advertising? Did I see maybe you were at BBDO for a little while?
I did. That's where I started. My father actually worked on the Dodge Advertising Council. So he was on the ad council, and BBDO happened to have the Dodge Automotive account. And I got to meet a lot of their executives, several of them that are still there. That was my dream job, was to go into the agency side with a big client. Learned very quickly that, you know, first off, 97% of the workforce was female in the beginning, and 3% of the board was female. So I saw a massive glass ceiling. I saw a lot of people that did not have families, never got married, or married someone in the business but didn't have children, and really just decided that that really wasn't for me. But it was interesting because I entered the advertising world when the internet was born. So I fought for the internet the way social media, the way millennials fought for social media. And so I got to have to tell art directors that, you know, had turned aircraft carriers for a Visa commercial, look, you're trying to launch a real estate platform online. We can't do this in television. Like it can't, it's got to be online. We've got to figure out what this pay-per-click stuff is and how do we do digital ads. And that led me into working for my first tech startup, because they saw that I was doing that and they got interested in me. They were moving, like I said, in the 90s, real estate was cheap. So they were moving down here from California and from Chicago, and they built a team, and I was their sixth hire and started the marketing department at Knowledge Storm, which ultimately got sold to Tech Target. Then the bubble burst. Stayed at the agency side back and forth, and then ended up in the brand side.
So you ended up, I want to go backwards for just a second. You ended up in that tech space when that was really... I mean, it was the birth of a lot of that to some extent. Yep. So although there was certainly a bust and a regrouping in many ways, it did allow you to be able to just know that that probably was not only an opportunity, but again, perhaps because it was so new, whether you were male or female, a lot of people are starting kind of at the same position. So maybe a little bit differently than what you had experienced before, where the people who were doing most of the work in some areas were females, but the management team tended to be male. Perhaps, did you find in the tech space that maybe it was a little more 50-50, or at least the opportunity was different?
I think the opportunity was different. It was for those of us that stepped into the circle early. So I really, and I do think if you look at a lot of people in the Atlanta market that have risen to the ranks, both male and female, a lot of us came from that spot. There's actually three of us that came from Knowledge Storm that are all executive level marketers. And so I think that's very interesting. And so I think it did. There still was a massive glass ceiling. There still is, let's be honest. But it really was learning the new stuff. So learning what technology meant in advertising moving forward, moving from broadcast and outdoor and print to a digital environment and then into social. And I've really stayed on top of that. And that's made me relevant throughout my career. Now it's how do you measure all of that back to KPIs? For revenue to the board. And that's really where I've seen the biggest transition to marketing in the last 5 years is, you know, social media was this fun tool. And now it's, what is it going to do for me? Instagram can be great for employee brand awareness or culture, but in a B2B world, is it really going to sell anything? So you got to make those cases along the way.
Yeah. And obviously attribution, as we become more and more familiar with it and how it works, of course, Google always wants to take last touch and say, you know what works, you know, miraculously, it's always PPC. None of this other stuff, no brand building, none of that ever works. It's all PPC, you know, oriented. I feel like, you know, I'm on LinkedIn a lot, and I do feel like a lot of what I am seeing on LinkedIn, maybe to some extent, is a little bit of a pushback against some of the, you know, only last touch attribution is really what's most important, because you do still have to build a brand. If you don't build something, you'll never get in the intender set. You know, most of us do make life choices that aren't just based on what's the cheapest out there in the marketplace. And so there is still, you know, a need to build that. I want to make sure we get into what you guys are doing today. You work at in some ways, at a technology company now. They do background checks. They do all kinds of things. Not sure if you did a background check on me. If you did prior to this, you probably would not have jumped on. So I appreciate you leaving me clean and leaving my credit report in good shape. Not sure if you can fix that for me. I maybe made some bad life choices.
That goes against the regulation, you know.
Okay, fair enough. I had to ask. So as you made your way through this, you said something that I want to hit on for a second. You said there's kind of a group of three of you that you knew really well that kind of came from that company.
Yeah, it's really interesting because one of my peers got her first CMO role in a fintech company. And I had my first CMO role was in a fintech company. And we hadn't talked and we'd never really formally met. We had worked together, but for a very short period of time during a transition at Knowledge Storm. And she reached out to me and just was like, you know, I'd really love to pick your brain. And so we sat down and I told her the challenges of working in a very regulated industry and what you're going to have to do in the B2B side, because she was coming from the agency side as well. And now
everybody wants to get out of the agency business.
Well, it's like you either love it or you hate it. And you used to be considered a wimp when you left the agency business, which I think is so funny, because you manage 6 to 10 brands at once. At one point, at Millward Brown, I managed Coca-Cola, Bank of America, Arby's, Outback, Michelin, you're managing stuff and you have to make sure that those smaller clients feel is equally important as those big multi-million dollar ones. So it's just a different model.
A mother to 10 sometimes, a mother to 10 or 15 people sometimes is what it is.
Yeah, and it's a rat race, but it's fun. It's a great place to learn the agency model, and it's much easier to go back into the agency if you leave it versus going from the brand side into the agency model, because it really is. It's intense, but it's a great learning ground.
You can tell that I still have a stake in an agency because I'm 26, but I look 53.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm like, that's how it works. Those agencies definitely give you some wrinkles and some gray hairs.
But it does sometimes allow you to learn a lot of different things, to your point, from there. And obviously, it's part of what becomes your life trajectory. You stayed in the Atlanta market. You worked for a couple of different companies. And then ultimately, you end up at First Advantage about 3 years ago. So how did you land there? And what was your interest initially in them as a company?
It's interesting. I was actually in an ed tech company that was a startup, much smaller than First Advantage. And the recruiter reached out to me because my name had come across her desk from our CEO. But most of our executives don't live in Atlanta. Our headquarters is here, but a lot of our staff live around the world. And he had heard about me from his New York network. So because I've lived in Atlanta my whole life, actually my broader network is global. I just know a lot of people in the industry from the agency and the marketing side. And I was recommended and she reached out to me and I was not looking for anything at the time and had a great conversation with her, told her how big of a challenge it was going to be to find someone that would take this on. And she's like, I agree with you. Would you be willing to sit down and talk to our CRO and CEO just about it and see if you have candidates that would be interested? And I said, sure. So I met with them, got to know a little bit more about the business and the CEO specifically. Scott had just come on board 4 months prior and he was the co-founder of Mindtree. And so knowing what they wanted to do and how they wanted to navigate it, as Scott will tell you, I was up for the challenge. So I threw my hat in the ring and the rest is history. I basically came in, the brand was in pretty bad turmoil. It was all for a position to sell, which we did in January, private equity owned, 4,000 employees, 26 offices around the globe. I came in, cleaned house, restaffed the entire global org, got all new agencies and really pivoted the whole brand and company. And it's been a wild ride. It's been a lot of fun. But Scott really brought in a great leadership team at the helm. So that really helped. And then I can cherry pick really good marketing talent. So that made my job a lot easier.
You said a couple of things in there I want to unpack if we can. So one of them was, at least initially, you'd said you thought it would be hard for them to find somebody specifically for the position. Now, the company is called First Advantage. Where do you feel like you guys kind of land? Obviously, you do background checks. You do all kinds of staffing elements as far as background pieces.
We are the industry leader in background screening and any type of screening solutions. We also screen in resident for multifamily housing. So do people, have the credit to support taking on an apartment or a home, or do they have a criminal activity? Because you really don't need criminals living in a multifamily complex. We really came in and took over the market from an enterprise perspective. We have a great sales team and really built deep relationships with some of the world's largest brands and have become their trusted advisor and partner in the screening process. Because You can't just have fast screens and the right talent. It's a process. And we have a whole Six Sigma team in operations that helps them navigate these things. And it's been a really fun time. We've worked our butts off, I'm not going to lie. But we basically can help you do anything from investigative research on executives down to fingerprinting high-level executives that you need to make sure that they have, you know, biometrics tracked because they're that large of an entity, all the way up to celebrities. I mean, it's crazy what we do. It's fascinating. HR tech is a very interesting space. We're innovating a lot. COVID has caused us to take virtual drug testing to the market. So
yeah, I saw several things COVID related that you guys were doing. If I send you some liquor bottles, can you see if my daughter has been touching them?
No, but I can send you a swab to swab her mouth and you can find out. Millennials are really driving change. They don't understand the process. I've never been professionally screened to my knowledge because I worked in agencies and tech startups. Let's be honest. You know, so back then it wasn't that big important, but I mean, to be truly properly screened is a process.
If you screened everybody in the agency space, at least a few years ago, there'd be no employees.
There'd be no employees. Yeah.
That's right.
Yep.
So what have you been focusing as, you know, global? And again, I'll be the first to admit, I've probably heard of First Advantage before, but I wasn't familiar with everything you guys did. You talked a bit about obviously how you guys have expanded in the time of COVID, which is also even more interesting. Where do you feel like you're spending your time as you start to plan for 2021 in the position that you're in?
It's interesting. We are really spending a lot of time in web traffic, but not from a pay-per-click perspective. We have the strongest brand recognition in the industry for our name. Our competitors' top key paid words is First Advantage. So part of that was a content strategy that I implemented when I started. Part of it was just really being well-known in the industry, but this industry is also very word of mouth. So I used to host an annual user conference. I actually would be there now in Vegas every year. And since we're not doing that, we're trying to come up with other ways to stay really engaged with our customers and give our customers a platform to talk to one another. This industry changes, and you know, if you're in finance, you want to know what others are doing. No one's going to spill their secret sauce, but they like to know what challenges they're taking on. If you're hiring globally, how are you doing that? What's your screening protocols? How are you handling it? And there's a lot of information on the web. There's also, like I said, so many changes because people are not in person. So to give you an example of what we're seeing is culturally around the world, there are several cultures that are very comfortable with the fact that you're sitting across from me, I can see you, or I can see you in a room of 500 people. I'm fine. I didn't background screen you. I trusted you. I shook your hand. I know who you are. Those cultures are now getting really interesting in screening, and they never have before because they want to validate that this person is a good person. They need some type of validation, and that in person isn't happening.
And so the global aspect of what you guys do will potentially only increase from here. Let's talk about you a little bit, not personally, but let's talk about it from your perspective. You've obviously spent time on the agency side. You spent time in the ed tech side, the fintech side, in the CMO position. What pushes you now? What do you wish you knew more about? What's exciting you to try to spend your time in now? Or do you know it all? And if you know it all, that's okay. There's got to be a few people out there.
I really think that I'm seeing a huge transition, and I talk to my team a lot about this, that I think one of the things that's most important to all marketers, not just CMOs, but every person in the marketing industry right now, is to figure out what are you delivering at the board level. I don't give a crap if you're a junior associate. Find out how it rolls up so that you know that you're making an impact and quantitatively track that. Because at the end of the day, that's what's really going to impact your career path in marketing. I do think that's really because of the car business. I was very good at knowing how to measure my ROI and to measure my media spend and to quantitate what is most important in the business. And also, how do you not only tie back to revenue, but what is it that's most important that the board wants to see out of marketing? And that varies per company. And so I think you really need to know that, and you need to find out. And asking your boss how to track that for you personally is a great way to build a career path.
You think there's still an element that we always have to educate the board? Because again, they tend to be a little older sometimes. tend to be, it's like the whole nightclub thing, right? By the time my parents wanted to go hang out at a nightclub that I had gone to as a kid, you know, that's the MySpace of the industry. So are you finding you have to still continue to educate them on what's new, what's happening out in the marketplace?
Yeah, you really do. And it's been, like I said, we have so much web traffic that we're really starting to evaluate that. And what we used to see was a lot of small and mid-market. Now we're seeing a lot of enterprise on it. We work with 45% of the Fortune 100. So it's a great way to know, is there a client on there that's poking around? Is that maybe is at risk? You need to know these types of things. So knowing all the back ends of that and being able to give that to the executive sponsors and the leadership team so that they can reach out and basically be more involved with the customers. I think you need a full customer life cycle throughout the process. We also have a very long tailed enterprise cycle. So if I can shorten that in any way, I then get sales to back me and be happy with it. So really my whole 2021 strategy is all on how do we finally tie sales and marketing collectively together for basically revenue enablement. That's it.
MQLs and SQLs, and to your point, some people may not even if they are in the business-to-business space, they may not realize, again, the technology is there to be able to provide some of that deeper level of tracking of just even industry that's visiting your website. I know the first time I saw that technology, I was like, what? They could do that? That's pretty...
Big Brother is really Big Brother in the marketing world.
But to some extent, it's what also helps you to better make sure that your messaging is tied back to customer and client. Because if the messaging that you have out there isn't resonating with the people that you think that it is, and if they're not visiting your site, we're all just standing around talking to each other, right?
Exactly. And it's all different, obviously, for B2B versus B2C. But in the B2B world, if you are in the enterprise world, I would advise you to really dive through your website because you're going to be really interested at how many large clients are sitting at home looking for information. And that is something that they used to get in QBRs or over dinner or different or in board meetings. And so it is really interesting to see that. And it's a great trend for us. So I'm going to ride it.
That's a great last point, which again is that we used to be able to garner that information in lots of different ways. And we don't know how long some of this will last, but your website is such a minefield of information well beyond just Google Analytics to be able to really draw some analogies from and dig in deeper. Last question for you. Talk to me a little bit about social for you. I see you out there on LinkedIn a lot more. Is it a platform that you enjoy? What do you feel like you're getting it from it these days?
I love all social platforms. I use them for different reasons. Facebook's always kind of been private for me. It's just more my family stuff. Instagram's more kind of like my fun personal brand. Like how am I perceived in business and how am I perceived like in my household, such as the headset photo that we talked about earlier. Yeah. So that's kind of different. LinkedIn has always kind of been my business platform professionally, just because I've made some great connections there. I've met people on LinkedIn and then met them in real life. I've also done that on Twitter. I think that it's right now there's a huge fight for rising above the noise, and that's going to get even more challenging on any channel. But I do think people that are producing really, really good content are going to be able to, you know, if you want long form content, you have a different platform. If you want short form content, you have a different platform. If you want video content, it depends on how you consume. And so for me, I've always enjoyed really networking on LinkedIn and meeting people such as you.
Still comes down to content. Thank you for that last little plug. Well, listen, Chief Marketing Officer, First Advantage, Catherine, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
It's been great. Thank you.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. Podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting, but your agency should. Uconnex provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency. Something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to Uconnex today for a free demo. Uconnex, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.
This episode of the CMO Suite is also brought to you by Winmo. Winmo is the most comprehensive and widely used advertising database, providing an unfair advantage to media and marketing professionals nationwide. CMO Suite listeners receive complimentary trials of Winmo just by visiting winmo.com/CMO Suite.